Long Parshat Bo, our Parsha is a major turning point in Jewish history. We are going to go free. In our Parsha, we're going to learn about the plague of the firstborns, Makat Bechorot. We're going to learn about the mitzvah of Tefillin. We're going to learn about the mitzvah, the first mitzvah the Jewish people get, the mitzvah of the month, the mitzvah of the calendar. We will learn about the mitzvah of the Paschal offering. We will learn about how the Jews had to eat it quickly. We will learn about the commandment to eat it roasted and not to eat it raw. We will learn about the promise of future generations. We will learn about the plague of the firstborn. We will learn how the Egyptians tried to rush them out of Egypt and why they ended up eating matzah. We will learn the mitzvah to dedicate our firstborn sons and firstborn cattle. And we will learn about the promise to inherit the land of Israel and have wicked children. Yes, the wicked son is mentioned in our parsha. We will learn about the mitzvah of tefillin and the mitzvah of redeeming a donkey by a sheep and the mitzvah of telling our children the story of leaving Mitzrayim. So that's in a nutshell our parsha. We have a lot to do. Let's move quickly. So Hashem tells Moshe, come to Pharaoh, I've hardened his heart, because I want you to tell your children the miracles that happened here, and how I played around with Pharaoh, and the miracles I've done here. And it will help you recognize that I run the world. So Moshe and Aaron come to Pharaoh and say, God sent us to tell you, till when do you refuse to be humble before me? You're rebellious against me. You're arrogant next to me. Send my nation and let them go. Why are they giving him rebuke? Because we often look at the action and not the root of the action. If we would pay attention to why we do something, very often we could remedy what we do. It's not always a question of what's being done, but rather why it's being done. If a person can recognize what his weakness is in his personality and work on that, then very often everything else will just fall into place. Pharaoh's issue here is his arrogance. And if you refuse, they tell him, tomorrow locust will come and destroy the country. You won't be able to see the land. You won't be able to see the sun. Anything that's left from the hail will be consumed. Your houses and your servants' houses will be filled with locust, whatever, some type of locust, that you've never seen from the day Egypt exists. And with that, Moshe and Aaron walk out. They do not wait for a response. And his servants tell him, you know, this is destroying us. Let them go. Don't you realize Egypt's lost? And Moshe and Aaron are summoned before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh says, you can go. Who's going? Moshe says, everyone. All our cattle, all our children, all our families. It's a celebration in honor of Hashem. And Pharaoh says, you guys are trying to play games with me. You are all going to be hurt if you go now. You think you need to take kids to go serve Hashem. You're taking the kids because you want to run away. And your thoughts are going to come right back in your face. I'm not going to let you do it. The men can go. That's what you're really asking. Now get out of here. So Pharaoh tells them, I want you to recognize that evil is against your face. So the first interpretation is what I said. Evil that you're thinking to do, to run away, is going to come right back in your face. I'm not letting you do it. But our sages say there was a star called evil, called Ra'a. And Pharaoh said, I see in this desert the direction you're traveling, the star awaits you, and bad things are going to happen to you. A lot of your blood is going to be spilled. And so I want to spare you that. Don't take all the kids out there with you. Look at the stars. And that's why when the Jewish people sinned with the golden calf, Moshe said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, why should the Egyptians say that you took us out of Egypt under the star Ra'a, and that's why so many people died? Don't kill the Jews over the calf, because it will tarnish your reputation. That's the verse. Lama yomeru Mitzrayim lemor. Why should the Egyptians say the following? Bera'a hotziyam. He took them out of Egypt under the star Ra'a. So that's our sage's interpretation. We cannot do questions right now. We're too short on time. So they are chased out. And Hashem tells Moshe, raise your staff and the locusts come charging in. So all night long there's this eastern wind, and all day and all night it's blowing, and by the morning locusts have come into Egypt. And there's this heavy plague like there never was and there would never again be. And there are so many locusts attacking Egypt that it's dark. It's like it's nightfall. And they consume everything. The hail wouldn't destroy things that were soft, like grass. Just bent under the hail. But the locusts, they destroyed everything. They stripped down the trees. They destroyed all the vegetation. They consumed everything they could find. And Paro quickly calls Moshe and Aaron, and he says, I was wrong. I behaved inappropriately to Hashem and to you. I kicked you out. Please forgive me only this time. Pray to Hashem, because death has descended upon us. He should remove that from us. And Moshe walks out and prays to Hashem, and a western wind comes strongly and carries all the locusts out of Egypt. Even the Egyptians thought they'd pickle locusts and eat them. They'd have something to eat. They flew out, even those locusts that were in pickle jars, everything flew out of Egypt, and Pharaoh's heart is hardened by Hashem, and he doesn't send the Jews. And Pharaoh is not warned. We said the plagues come in series. 1, 2 with a warning, 3 without a warning. So we had hail, locust with a warning, and now the darkness will come without warning. Hashem tells Moshe, extend your hand to the heavens and let Egypt turn dark. And so Moshe raises his hands to the heaven, and darkness settles on Egypt for 3 days. People don't see one another. People don't stand from where they're sitting. People don't move. The Jews have light. The Egyptians are stuck frozen. The darkness is so thick that they can't even move. After 3 days, it lightens up. And during this time, we have a tradition that many, many, many Jews died. And the Egyptians were unaware of it. And so the Jews all buried their brethren without the Egyptians knowing. And here we have a surprise. The Jewish people are going to leave Mitzrayim. They're going to exit Egypt. And they're going to wonder what type of God they are serving, because they're coming out of Egypt seeing very powerful plagues, but all they see is punishment. And on this plague of darkness, they see their relatives dying. And the average person lost most of their family in this plague of darkness. If the Egyptians thought they had it bad, the Jews had it worse. 4 out of 5 Jews died. Which Jews died? So our sages say it was the Jews that did not want to leave Egypt. And that's not difficult to understand. As bad as things are, man tends to be scared of change. Man tends to think that change might even be worse. You don't know. And we see when the Jews left to the desert, they would often say, why'd we leave? We should have never left. Very often when we make changes, people get married and they say, I should have never married this woman. There are many moves that people make and they say, the change was a bad move. We're scared of change, but we must be open to change. Very often we miss the greatest opportunities in our life for fear of change. So people have to be responsible, people have to prepare, but people also have to be prepared to change. And the plagues until now were preparing the Jewish people for change. You're going to leave. You're going to be free men. Well, not everyone was prepared for that. And some people were not prepared to leave. So Hashem had them die. And that's very scary. If you think about what it meant to be a Jew approaching the next plague, if the previous plague, without warning, the Jews suffered, it would seem more than the Egyptians. So now there's going to be the plague of firstborn. What am I supposed to do? Hashem says, don't worry, you're leaving. How much faith must you have to walk with Hashem after a person has seen their relatives all perish? And it wasn't the Egyptians that killed them. So Paro summons Moshe, and he says, go serve Hashem, just leave me your sheep and cattle. You could take the kids. Moshe says, we're going and we're sacrificing, and you'll give us sacrifices. And I want you to know that just like now we're talking, it's midnight. At this time, the plague of the firstborn will hit. And Paro tells him, I want you to leave. And don't show your face here again, because if you show your face here again, you will die. And Moshe says, you're right, I won't come back to you. indicating you will still come to me. So Moshe tells the people, ask the Egyptians to lend you their gold and silver vessels. This forces the Jew to face the Egyptian and recognize to himself and to the Egyptian, I am an autonomous being. I can take responsibility. I want to borrow your object. When a Jew tells an Egyptian, I want to borrow your gold or silver vessel, he is saying, I am worthy of using a gold vessel. For a Jew to say that, after the Egyptians have been putting them down, tossing their children to death as though they were worthless creatures, and now the Jew has to look the Egyptian in the eye and say, can I borrow your gold goblet? Well, the Jew is going to think the Egyptian's going to kill him. You're using a gold goblet? What do you need a gold goblet for? And you're going to take responsibility on my gold goblet? You can take responsibility over anything? Hashem is forcing the Jews to change and to recognize that they're different and to recognize that they are autonomous beings. And so the Jews are given a commandment, go borrow. And an unusual thing happens. The pasuk says, Hashem caused the Jews to find favor in the Egyptians' eyes. If until now the Egyptians looked down at them, now the Egyptians looked at them and said, wow, you have a force on your side. Something else is going on here. And so the Egyptians lend them their gold and silver vessels. And Moshe has warned Paro that their firstborns will die. In Egypt, they worship the firstborn. So if Moshe has been consecutively knocking down their gods, now he's coming to a very personal god. In every home, there was a child that they worshipped, that they believed he was part of the godly beings on this planet, their firstborn. And now Moshe is telling them, well, your firstborns are going to die. And the Jews, well, a dog won't even bark at them or growl at them. And you'll see that the Jews are different than the Egyptians. And then your servants will come begging me to leave, and that's when I'll leave. And Moshe leaves, and Moshe's pretty upset. Here he's been servicing Paro all this time, and Paro tells him, if you show your face again, I'm going to kill you. I find this anger of Moshe to be incredible. What are you getting upset about? Look at what you did to Paro. You destroyed his economy. You destroyed his reputation. You destroyed his Nile. What didn't you destroy about his country? No, here we see the greatness of Moshe. Moshe feels like, I didn't do anything. What's he upset at me for? Moshe is honestly upset at Paro for being upset at him, because to Moshe it's so obvious that he didn't do anything. Here we see the trueness in Moshe's humility. Only a person who is honestly humble can be upset at Paro for being upset at him. If we were involved, of course he'd say, you know what I did to him? Of course he's upset at me. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't. Moshe's upset at Paro. What are you upset at me for? Because Moshe honestly felt, I didn't do anything. I really didn't do anything. I'm God's messenger. What did I do? Hashem tells Moshe, there are going to have to be more miracles in Egypt. That's the idea of making Paro refuse. And then Hashem tells Moshe, now you're going to receive the first mitzvah. And the first mitzvah is about time. If there's something that a slave doesn't have, it's time. There's always someone telling him what to do with his time. And Hashem tells Moshe, even though the world was created in Tishrei, and I judge the world on Tishrei, but there's a new world being created now. It's the Jewish people. And so you will count the months from now, from the beginning of this month, the month of Nisan. That's your starting point. That's when you became a nation. And the fact that we count month number 1, 2, 3 back to Nisan is one of the ways in which we commemorate the great miracle of leaving Mitzrayim. And that's why when the Jews left Babylon, they took the Babylonian names out with them, because they wanted to commemorate the exodus from Babylon. They had hoped it would be even greater than the exodus from Mitzrayim. Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, Etanim, Ziv. Yeah. In Tanakh, Yerach Haitanim, that's Tishrei. I don't know who's the chicken or who's the egg. I don't know. So Moshe is taught how to designate a new moon. Are we focused? Can we do a quick class on the new moon? Yes?
New moon.
Okay. What goes on when we have a new moon? So number one, we were given our own calendar. If the Muslims have a lunar calendar that shifts along the seasons, that's why they celebrate their holidays different seasons, because it shifts around the solar year, right? Because the lunar year is 354 days. So every year they lose 11 days against the solar calendar. And the Christians have a solar calendar that's only the sun, as the moon is irrelevant, right? Their months are 30 and 31 days. The lunar month is 29 and a half day, right? So the Jews have the synthesis. Lunar month with leap months in order to balance the sun so that we're always on the same seasons. So our calendar synthesizes the moon with the sun. We have both. In Islam, they write from right to left. In Western culture, in America, right, they write from left to right. In Hebrew, our words go from right to left, and you always pull the pen from left to right in order to write. You always have to pull from left to right. So you're always pulling from left to right as you write from right to left. If Judaism has Shabbos on the seventh day, so Islam goes to Friday, and Christianity goes to Sunday. Hashem always gave us that path, which others tried to mimic, and they pulled to the right or they pulled to the left, but we were given a path of balance that runs in between. So Hashem says, here's the secret of how you run the calendar. Now the calendar in Egypt was a major thing. The priests controlled the people by controlling the calendar. By controlling the calendar, they could tell the people, we know and we control when the Nile rises. In fact, they just had a very good calendar, and they were able to forecast when the Nile should rise based on their calendar. So they would take all the people out to the Nile, and they say, now we're going to pray, and you're going to see if our prayers are accepted, then the Nile will rise. They had a very good, accurate calendar, the Egyptian calendar. But this was how they controlled the people, through the calendar. And throughout history, he who wanted to control the people controlled time, controlled the calendar. So our first mitzvah is about our calendar. We have a Jewish calendar. Hashem says, here's how it works. So we will now look at the sky for a minute and imagine that the solar system revolves around Earth, just because it's easier to describe this way. Really, we know the Earth is spinning on its axis, right? And the Earth is going around the sun. But for our sake, we'll describe it as though, as the Earth is spinning, we see the stars as though they move. So we're going to describe it as though the stars are moving, okay? And being that we're up here and we're spinning, right? So it looks like all the stars are shifting from west to east, right? So if you start the night and you look out at the sky and you look at the different stars, you will see that as the night proceeds, they all shift from east to west. They're all shifting from east to west, just like the sun rises in the east and then shifts to the west. All the stars rise from the east and shift their way to the west, except for a few that are at the peak, the northern star, etc. But our stars primarily are going to shift from east to west. Yes? Okay. So now let's imagine. It's 6 o'clock at night, and it's the 15th of the month. We look to the east, and on the 15th of the month, the moon rises. And it goes across the sky, and at 6 o'clock in the morning, just as the sun is about to rise, the moon sets. Okay, 6 o'clock in the morning, we look to the east, the sun rises. It goes across the horizon, and at 6 o'clock at night, it's going to set. Now we're at the 16th of the month, right? We've ended a day, 16th of the month. Well, every day, the moon lags behind the sun by about 45 minutes. So on the 16th of the month, you're going to look to the east at 6 o'clock, and the moon won't rise. At 6:45, the moon will rise. And now you will watch it going across the horizon. It's had a 45-minute delay. And now during the 12 hours of the night, it loses another 23 minutes. It loses 23 minutes at night and 23 minutes by day, right? In total, every 24-hour period, it loses 45 minutes. So that means that tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, the moon will be over the horizon. It won't set, and the sun will already rise at 6 o'clock in the morning. The next night, you're going to look at the right, The sun will set again at about 6. You're going to look to the east and wait. And only when? At 7:30 will the moon finally rise. And then it'll go across the sky. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's higher up. Until you hit a week later, right? It is now the 22nd of the month. And now you're looking to the east. And at midnight, the moon only rises. And then by 6 o'clock, it's straight ahead. 6 o'clock in the morning. And by the time you hit the 28th of the month, you are looking to the east at 5:20, 5:30 in the morning. The sun is about to rise, and the moon rises. And by now, it's the 28th of the month. The moon is a tiny slither. It's like a little banana, and it rises. And it is now 5:45 in the morning, your moon rose. And it only made it up a little above the horizon when the sun rose. Okay, 29th of the month. And then the sun overtakes the moon. And then the sun sets, and the moon will set after it. And that moment when the sun overtakes the moon, that's called the molad. The new moon was just born. Because what's going to happen next is the next night, you're going to look to the east, it won't be there. 6 o'clock in the morning, it's not there, because what happens now? The sun overtakes the moon, and the sun is crossing the sky all day, and at 6 o'clock at night, the sun sets, and at 6:12, the moon sets. The moon is there. The next morning, at 6 o'clock, the sun rises. At 6:35, the moon rises. You can't see the moon rising. What are you going to see? The sun will set at 6 o'clock, and the moon will set at 6:45. It's at 7. So when you look to the sunset on the first of the month, and now the sun just overtook the moon, the sun sets, and you see the moon for 5 minutes, 10 minutes until it sets, that's the new moon. The second you see the moon for the first time on the first of the month, the second you see that moon setting after the sun, that's the new moon. You know, tonight is Rosh Chodesh. Last night I still saw the moon rise. Tonight I already see the moon set. Now I see the other slither of the moon, which will slowly grow until the full moon. Now that's the new moon. So that's what Hashem taught Moshe, what we're seeing with the new moon, and how we make a leap year and a leap month. And every Jew is commanded to take a sheep for their family. And we get together as clans to eat that sheep. Now, sheep generally give birth in the month of Adar. That means a sheep that's up to a year old is not going to be 9 months old, it's going to be 1 month old. The sheeps give birth now, at the end of the winter, and a month from now is when the sheep will generally give birth. So the mitzvah of eating a paschal offering is we take one sheep that's under a year old, which will naturally mean it's about 1 month old, and we eat that, the whole family. Everyone together eats that. That's the paschal offering. And we have a mitzvah. Hashem tells them, take the sheep and hold it in your house until Pesach. And then on Pesach, on the 14th, you will slaughter that sheep, take its blood, and put it on your doorposts. And then you'll sit in the house all night, and you'll have roast. And you'll roast it whole. The head and the whole body, everything whole gets roasted. And you'll eat it with matzah and maror. You can't eat it raw. You can't cook it. You must roast it. Now, what's the idea? The Jews have been worshipping the sheep. Now they have to take the animal they've been worshipping until now, pull it, tie it by their beds. They're going to spend the next 4 nights with the sheep licking their feet, soiling their house. And the kids are going to ask, Abba, what are you doing? And the father says, I'm going to slaughter that sheep. And the kid's going to say, Abba, I thought you said it's God. And the father's going to say, no, that was a mistake. And then the father's going to have to go on the night that everyone, Jews and Egyptians, believed that the power of the sheep is most powerful. Because in the zodiac, the month of Nisan is the zodiac of the sheep. And on the 15th of the month is when they believed their force was most powerful, in the full moon, the 15th of the month. So on that night, Hashem says, you're going to eat it. You're going to eat that sheep. And at midnight, when the Egyptians believe they're most powerful, I will destroy all the Egyptian gods, including the firstborns, which they believe are gods. And you can't hide. The Jews now have to stand by what they believe. You make roast. So you'll say, I'll make roast. And if an Egyptian will walk in, I'll say, no, this is roasted dog. No, you leave it whole. The whole thing has to be on the roast so that anyone who walks in can see what you're eating. And that's how you have to sit in your homes. So Rabbeinu Yonah quotes a medrash. The Jews were sitting in their homes, shaking in their boots. They were scared stiff. What's going on? Now it's worse than that. The Egyptians traveling around could wonder which is a Jewish home and which isn't a Jewish home. It's late at night. No. The Jews first take the blood and they make a sign outside their door. They take the blood of the sheep and they have to mark their doors with the blood of what the Egyptians believed and the Jews also believed were God. So the mitzvah was pretty scary, and the Jews had to live up to it. And then Hashem added a notch. He said, when you take the sheep, it will be on your one-off day. By Egyptian law, Moshe had gotten Paro to agree that on Shabbos the Jews would have off. So the Egyptians could say, you're taking advantage of the day we gave you off in order to take our gods to slaughter. The Jews risked that day, and that's why we commemorate it every year. We call it Shabbat HaGadol, the Shabbos of the Great Miracle. The Jews risked their lives, they risked their freedom, and they took the sheep, which they had hitherto worshipped, they took it home to be roasted and eaten, as was Hashem's mitzvah. And if the Egyptian walks in and says, what do you think you're doing? He will find all the Jews ready to leave. They have all their bags packed. They're standing there ready to leave. Ah, you're going to make a jailbreak. You all think you're going to escape. You're eating our God tonight. You're roasting him whole. You're sprinkling his blood tonight when we believe he's most powerful. And you're all standing here ready to leave with our borrowed gold and silver vessels. So a Jew really had to believe that this was going to happen. Think about what it meant. They felt defenseless. Here I am at home. And what did the Jews hear? Crying all over Egypt. Because it says in Masechet Tzmachot, something people don't know. How did Makas Bechoros happen? People think came midnight. Boom! All the Egyptian firstborns are dead. 2 seconds, everyone's dead. Says the Medrash in Masechet Tzmachot. Came midnight, and all the firstborn started moaning and groaning and crying. And they said, we're dying! And they became deathly ill, to the verge of death. And they spent all night crying. From midnight till the morning, the firstborns were on the verge of death. But they weren't dead yet. So throughout Egypt, they hear people crying and praying and wailing. And they're at home and they have no idea what's going on outside. They have to believe everything's okay. There isn't a pogrom happening. So the Jews were scared. They were praying. It says the dogs weren't bothering the Jews. They were barking into the Egyptians' homes. And they'd come in and they'd dig. The Egyptians would bury their firstborn in the house. They believed he was a god. If a firstborn would die, they'd bury him in the house. So whoever had a firstborn in the house would find dogs coming into the house, digging and pulling them out of the grave. So the firstborn were being defiled, right? Now, Egyptians were promiscuous. So you could have a man who had 3 wives. Well, each wife had a child, which was the firstborn, so they would die. Then the wife cheated on her husband with the neighbor. So the 3rd kid wasn't his kid, it was the neighbor's kid. Well, it was the first child the neighbor had from this wife. So that was also considered a firstborn. So the Egyptians suddenly saw people dying. They couldn't see the system either. They didn't understand why so many people were dying. I didn't think he was a firstborn. Why is he dying? They didn't see the system. They just saw the firstborns dying, plus. And so, throughout Egypt, everyone was wailing. And what else happened was that almost all the gods in Egypt melted. If they were made of metal, they melted. If they were on pedestals, they fell and broke. The gods were all being destroyed throughout Egypt, except for 3 gods. Pharaoh, who believed he was God, and 2 mountains that were in the shape of a man and a woman, as we will see in next week's parsha. Those 2 mountains remained intact. And the Egyptians believed that those two mountains, one in the shape of males and the other in the shape of females, maybe they carved out the mountains to have that shape. They believed those two mountains must be the only deities who could stand up to the Jewish God. Because, you see, they weren't destroyed. And this was a ploy Hashem had done to give the Egyptians room to think we could still overtake them. And that's why the Egyptians will give chase. And that's why after we finish our seven-day journey, Hashem will say, go back to those mountains. Stand by those mountains. The Egyptians will believe that now you're trying to overcome those forces. And they'll believe that you're not succeeding. And that's why they'll give chase. So those two remained intact. And Hashem gives us a few mitzvos. Hashem says, first of all, put the blood on the houses, and I will see the blood, and Pasachti Alechem. What does it mean, Pasachti Alechem? What does it mean, the holiday of Pesach? Pesach means to pass over. Very good. That's the second pshat. The first pshat is that the word Pesach means to have mercy. Ufasachti Alechem. I will have mercy over you. I will save you from the plague. So when we say Pesach, we're talking about the holiday of mercy. Because technically, the Jews were sinful like the Egyptians. And in every Jewish home, there was a firstborn that the Jews believed was also a god. And the Jews worshipped their firstborn children as well. And that's why when Hashem says, there'll be a plague in Egypt, but I will protect you. What did we need protection for? What did we do wrong? The answer is the angels in heaven came and said, Rabban Shalom, why are the Jews any different? They're also worshipping their firstborn sons. If you're saying you're killing all the gods of Egypt, well, the firstborn Jews are also gods in Egypt. I don't know. If you want to look it up, it's the Jerusalem Talmud in Tractate Megillah that says what I just said. I don't know what it means that they worship them. It says over there that they worship their firstborn children. That's what it says. They believed they were gods. So that's the idea that the Medrash says that there were a few intervals in Yetzias Mitzrayim where Hashem says, I'm doing this. Because like a parent that says, that's my boy. Oh, you're telling me it doesn't make sense. Why? I don't have to answer you. It's my boy. For my boy, I'm going to do things different. And so Makas Bechoros, it says, Hashem came out over Mitzrayim. He didn't leave it in the hands of any angels. Because technically angels say, what's the system here? So the angel said, The Jewish firstborns are also gods in Egypt. So Hashem said, I'm doing this. And Hashem said, I will protect your homes. That's the idea of Pesach. I will protect your homes. So we have a mitzvah on Pesach to eat matzah. Matzah is called Nama Dimimenusa, the bread of faith, of connecting to Hashem, the bread of humility. What kept Paro from accepting Hashem was his arrogance. And on Pesach we say, leave out all the fluff. Bread is all so expanded. All year long we eat bread with all its fluff. On Pesach we say, let me connect to the truth. Let me connect to simple. In order for matzah to be kosher, as we will learn, it has to be only flour and water. No spices, no salt. We flour and water. So we have a mitzvah to eat matzah on Pesach and no chametz, no crackers, no wafers, no biscuits, no pitas, no bread, no pizza. You can make matzah pizza. And this is where we'll have to pick up Bezrat Shem on Thursday. We'll discuss as well the laws of Yom Tov, how Yom Tov is different than Shabbos. That's also discussed in this week's parsha. That's where we'll pick up Bezrat Shem.